racism. Now, for us to be able to break down his argument, and then for us to be able to criticize his argument, and it's a very powerful argument, okay? We really have to understand what's just about to come right now, okay? The second argument that we want to give for the existence of God is the cosmological argument, the argument also known as Burhan-e Imkan of Wujud, and the third one is Burhan-e Fitrat, the proof by innate disposition. But coming back to, you know, qiyas, an example of qiyas is the one that you have in front of you. The minor premise states that, look, you know, Socrates is a human being. Major premise is what? Is that all human beings, and usually major premises are universal, so they are received by all. All human beings are mortal. And then the conclusion drawn there is that, well, poor Socrates is mortal. Okay, now my question to you is, for this argument to be valid, what has to be valid? Okay, so you know what? The major premise has to be valid. What else has to be valid? The minor premise has to be valid. What else has to be valid? Sorry? Well, of course, the conclusion has to be valid. No, what has to be valid for the conclusion to be correct? You're right. Number one, the minor premise has to be valid. Number two, the major premise has to be valid. Number three,
cover the first one.
Right, so basically what you're saying to me is that the predicate in the minor premise should be repeated as the subject of the major premise, meaning that the form of the argument has to be valid. Not only the content of the argument has to be valid, but the form of the argument, the surah of the argument has to be valid as well, right? A is B, B is C, therefore A is C, right? Because I could come and say, hey, look, Socrates is mortal. Socrates is a human being. Socrates is Greek. Therefore, all human beings are Greek. Would that be valid? No. Why not? My major premise is correct. My minor premise is correct. What's wrong with the argument? The form of the argument is not right. Right? I went A is B. A is C, therefore B is C. That form is not correct. Okay? Therefore, for this argument to be valid, one, minor premise, two, major premise, three, form of the argument. Once the form of the argument is valid, the conclusion follows. Whether you like it or you don't like it, the conclusion follows from it. You cannot escape from it. I'm going to ask you one very difficult question now. How do I know the conclusion follows from it? How do you know if A is B and B is C, therefore A is C? Who said? You just enjoy playing with letters and it looks wonderful, so...
Self-proven.
Self-proven? Like, you mean to tell me there's no argument to show me that this is a valid form of argument? I just have to accept it like that?
It's a basic assumption.
It's a basic assumption? Anybody else? Right. So you're going down the right lane. These are the answers that I wanted to hear from you. I will demonstrate later that, look, you have to accept that there are certain premises and there are certain prepositions which cannot be proven. They just have to be accepted, right? It has to, like, the whole chain of argument has to end somewhere, and it has to start somewhere, where that premise no longer requires any proving by itself, okay? So, Aristotle, although he tried very hard to show that, look, I have a proof for why this argument is correct, and if you think about it, all he's saying is that, look, this is a universal statement, this is an example or an instance of the universal, therefore, whatever is true of the universal is also true of an instance of it as well, okay? It's very straightforward, but we're going to end up saying that this is one of the badihiyat, one of the self-proven or one of the, you know, primary principles that we're going to accept. But now here's, I'm sorry I'm pushing you a little too much today. I hope you're okay with that. Now here's, we've been talking about what is mantek, right? Mantek talks about two things. First, it talks about different forms which are valid, which forms are valid, and which forms are not valid. So for example, when I was studying this book of mantek, Al-Mudhaffar, in the seminary, it has three parts of it. The first two parts, or the second part, a thick section of it, simply talks about, I think, 16 different forms, which ones of them are valid, which ones of them are not valid, okay? That's a discussion on forms. Mantik rises to the occasion and helps you to discern which are correct forms, which are not correct forms. But there is also a discussion on the content as well. Which content is valid? Which substances are valid? Which are not valid? And it's not mantik, although it's discussed in mantik, it's not mantik that answers these questions. It is epistemology that answers these questions. It is the theory of knowledge that answers this question. It is ma'rifat shenasi that answers these questions. And ma'rifat shenasi is one of those very important discussions, philosophical proper, that a person has to have a grap on, like a grapple over, before they can start, you know, answering some of the difficult questions about the existence of God. It's one of those questions or one of those sciences that even precedes, just like mantik will precede, for example, a discussion on theology, on kalam and philosophy, epistemology also is one of those discussions that precedes all of the other discussions as well. I'm really surprised sometimes that members in the Muslim community, you know, from different walks of life, from different denominations, sometimes look down upon philosophy, look down upon epistemology, look down upon the study of logic as well. I remember someone, I was talking to somebody, and they just asked me out of the blue, you know, what do you study in the seminary? And I mentioned I study philosophy in the seminary, and they looked at me as if I performed a major sin or something, you know. But my question is, like, when you're faced with such a question, such as agnosticism, and how do you know God exists or doesn't exist? And you have to run through this whole process of saying that, look, there are certain forms by which we prove certain conclusions. And to prove them, we have to show that their substances are valid substances and their forms are correct forms. I mean, how exactly am I going to do that if I have absolutely no idea of logic and I have absolutely no idea of epistemology either, right? I have to have, you know, some handle on the sciences. What is epistemology? The Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, just to choose another encyclopedia besides Britannica, the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, it says epistemology, very simply put, is the study of knowledge and the study of justified beliefs. Doesn't mean too much to me, so let me put it into context for you. There's a scholar, a professor in Qom, Ustad Fayyazi. If you ever want to listen to lectures on philosophy, epistemology, and logic, Ustad Fayyazi is the one to listen to. A student of Ayatollah Jawadi and Ayatollah Misbah, both of them, and one of the leading philosophers right now. He's got this really wonderful book, which I'm not going to lend out to anybody, Dar Amedi Bar Ma'rifat Shenasi. It's in Farsi, in any case. You know, a series of lectures on Ma'rifat Shenasi. Okay? I think over there, he puts it into a really good context. He says that, look, every field of study, every science has a subject of study, right? So, for example, in mathematics, you study numbers, for example, all right? In sociology, you study human society, for example. I don't know, in physics, you study particles, right? And if there was a study where the subject of study was knowledge itself, what would you call it? Epistemology. All right. Very simple. Epistemology. So epistemology is that field of study where you take knowledge and you put it under the microscope, not the real Microsoft, but under the microscope, and you start studying it. And you say, well, what forms of knowledge do human beings have? What are valid forms of knowledge? How do we develop these forms of knowledge? Are they self-evident, or do they require some sort of, for example, rationalization? Can you associate a truth value to these forms of knowledge? Or can you not associate a truth value to these forms of knowledge? All these discussions, they fall under the study of epistemology. All right, coming back to the notes that you have in front of you. All right, it's very important that we engage in the study of epistemology. All right, it's important because we have to establish for ourselves that there are other sources of knowledge besides sensory data, besides what is understood by the five senses, okay? If you cannot establish for yourself